This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of July 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of July. Reading today, Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: call for community hub at derelict site, waste facility plans for motocross track, and court's £108 ruling is a slap in the face. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was call for community hub at derelict site. Residents group urges council to transform depot. Calls are being made for a derelict depot site to be turned into a community hub. The Highcliffe Forum for Community Action wants Winchester City Council to use the Bar End depot site to benefit local people. It is the biggest disused site in the city and is turning into an eyesore. The 2.8-acre site was subject to public consultation in 2022, but work on securing a development partner has been slow. The consultation suggested a number of options, including industrial, a community hub, healthcare and retail. Winchester City Council's website said that a recommendation for a preferred bidder was due to be presented to Cabinet on Tuesday, July the 16th. However, Council Leader Martin Todd confirmed that this would now be happening in September. In the past, local residents have called for more investment in community facilities to cover the Highcliffe and Bar End areas. Speaking at the Cabinet meeting on Tuesday, Janet Berry from the Highcliffe Forum and an ex-Labour City Councillor said the Forum had expected a recommendation on the preferred bidder to have been announced at this meeting. Quotes, as you know, Highcliffe Forum is responsible for taking the Highcliffe Community Plan forward on behalf of the community. This plan is cited as a major document alongside the Bar End design framework in terms of thinking about plans for the local area. Whilst recent consultations have focused on options such as healthcare and other proposals put forward by various organisations, Highcliffe Forum is keen to ensure that key proposals in the community plan are still considered. This includes the possibility of setting up a community-run hub and shop, as well as increasing the range of activities for children and young people and developing new leisure and social activities for everyone in Highcliffe. Ms. Berry added, Highcliffe Forum appreciates the new KGV pavilion, includes a new upstairs clubroom to be hired for occasional use. A community-run hub could complement this facility, with each providing different services. A community hub could provide exciting opportunities and act as a permanent base for a variety of organisations such as the Boxing Club. We understand that the council is keen to ensure that there is a food convenience store on the site. The addition of a community hub would help create a sense of neighbourhood in the area, something that Highcliffe richly deserves. Councillor Todd said, apologies that the information about when the Bar End depot plans were due to come back to Cabinet is not today. The plans are due to come to Cabinet in September, and I hope as part of that we will address the comments you have made to make sure the proposal meets the needs of the design framework. We're very willing to continue the conversations with the community about the best way to ensure we have the best community provision and access to community facilities in that area. We need to start by deciding how we can make the most of the new pavilion and take a wider view of the facilities in the Highcliffe area and comparing them to other parts of the city.
Waste facility plans for motocross track. A former motocross track near Winchester is set to be converted into an excavation waste facility with a capacity for 75,000 tonnes a year. Hampshire County Council officers have recommended councillors approve the change of use from motocross site at Down Farm into a construction, demolition, excavation, CDE, waste recycling and aggregate processing facility. The plan put forward by applicant G.K. Benford and Co. will see road planning for crushing and screening imported and stored to create recycled aggregate, as well as a new silo for concrete batching. The site in Down Farm Lane occupies a motocross track, Winchester Golf Academy, Pony Club, dog kennels and training, a day-to-day agricultural activities. Planning permission was granted in 2004 for a temporary 5-year change of use from agriculture to motocross track, and permanent permission was granted in 2011. The application proposed that the CDE waste recycling and aggregate production activities take place on a former motocross track. The site would be separated into 3 separate plots. Plot A would be a recycled waste inert, soils and concrete. Plot B would be a storage and operation site for an off-site concrete manufacturing business. And plot C would be a road planning storage and recycling facility. Plot A, currently occupied by the Pringle Reclaim Limited, a company specialising in treating construction waste, received an environmental permit in July 2022 that allowed it to treat 75,000 tonnes annually of waste to produce soil aggregates and substitutes. Anticipated vehicle movements associated with the Pringle operation are estimated to be 42 lorries daily, Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturdays, 7 a.m. to midday. Plot B will be occupied by Hilcon, a family-run business that stores aggregates and materials for concrete batching. It is estimated that 72 lorries make daily trips for the Hilcon operation, Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Saturdays from 7 a.m. to midday. RPS, which provides highway maintenance support across the county, will occupy the eastern part of the site, Plot C. A total of 19 representations were received. Among them, there were 18 objections and 1 in support. Catherine Hawkins objected, saying the development would generate traffic, dust and pollution. Another resident, Paul Williams, also said that the site already has lorry traffic and the application will increase it even more, affecting greatly those living next to the site. Littleton and Hairstock and Crawley Parish Councils objected and raised concerns over the impact on roads. The final decision was due to be made on July the 17th, as the Chronicle went to press, at the County Council's Regulatory Committee in Winchester.
And our third headline is titled, Court's £108 ruling is a slap in the face. A rogue trader who made more than £640,000 by fleecing 50 customers has been ordered to pay back just over £100, with the victim saying this is a slap in the face. Lawrence Martin was jailed for 5 years for defrauding £643,398 from customers after making false promises as he carried out building works and repairs that he never finished. Victims included people from Alresford, Bishop's Waltham and Eastleigh. A confiscation hearing at Southampton Crown Court heard how his company, CLJ Roofing Limited, also benefited a total of £501,333 from his fraud. But appearing in court via video link from HMP Caldingley in Surrey, Martin was ordered to pay back just £108.96, with his company told to pay £1. One of his victims was Eastleigh resident Judith Kipling, who employed Martin at Burnham Chase in Southampton to build a wet room in 2021. She was duped out of £32,500, all of her and her husband's joint life savings, and left only with shoddy and incomplete work. Judith said the order is a slap in the face. She said it was supposed to be justice. We all knew we would never get anything back from him, but it beggars belief. It just doesn't feel like justice at all. Lawrence is prolific, so when he gets out, he'll do it again. Obviously, the court hasn't taken this seriously. I am stunned. During the hearing, Prosecutor Ethu Crawley said, £108.96 is the only available money to confiscate, adding that both accounts used by Martin are due to be closed by the bank. Martin must pay in 56 days or serve an extra 14 days in jail. As reported, Martin, 36, carried out botched jobs in 29 instances. In total, he defrauded more than 50 victims, including a widow, those with disabilities, and the family of a terminally ill man, and all over a course of 3 years. He used bullying behavior towards customers and using the money gained to buy more materials, work on other incomplete jobs, or keep it for himself. He was jailed in February. The incidents took place across Hampshire, including in Southampton and Eastleigh, as well as Chichester and the Isle of Wight.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. Then we do the announcements and what's on. Firstly, the death announcements. Gladwell. Doreen May Gladwell, on the 21st of June, aged 96. Herridge. John Sidney Herridge, on the 25th of June, aged 90. Mansell. Angela Mansell, née Riley, died on the 27th of June, aged 59. Nicholson. Richard John Nicholson died on the 10th of July, aged 57. Rogers, Kate Rogers, died peacefully on the 29th of June, aged 96. Stedman, Bruce Peter Stedman, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 1st of July, aged 68. And Whiteear, Geoffrey Whiteear, on the 26th of June at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 89. Now, Andrew, you've got a Christian comment for us, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church, and it's entitled God and Money. Active Christians usually follow Jesus by praying and reading the Bible regularly, and by engaging with a faith community. Then there are several ways of discovering how deep our discipleship really stretches, with none more pertinent than how we follow our finance. Jesus knew this, and spoke about money more than virtually any other subject, including prayer in heaven. He taught very simply that those who are faithful with little will be trusted with more. As Billy Graham once put it, if a person gets their attitude towards money straight, it will help straighten out almost every other area in their life. Whether we consider ourselves to be well off and comfortable, or stretched and struggling financially, the Bible challenges all of us the same, to be faithful with what we have been given. In Jesus' day, as in most societies, there were a few extremely rich people and a large amount of very poor people. The rich, and especially the religious leaders, treated the poor with indifference at best and cruelty at worst. Jesus warned them through parables such as the rich man and Lazarus in Luke 16. He was only citing what Moses and the prophets would have taught, but somehow they had lost sight of the true heart of God amidst all the rules they had imposed on his people. Jesus himself made a point of sharing the resources he had available to treat those on the margins of society with particular kindness, care, and compassion. He taught his followers then, and now, to do the same, and become the ultimate role model for generosity by giving not just his resources, but his life. Our money is not a possession, but a resource available to use for good or evil. And like all our resources, it comes from God. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The world and all its people belong to him." God owns everything, but he is looking for people he can trust to use the resources within their influence for his glory and for the welfare of his children, rather than for their own private glory or glamour or attention. Some years ago, our church advertised a £1 car wash. We invited drivers into our car park, where our enthusiastic volunteers washed the dirt and dust off their cars. Then, instead of taking their money, we gave them £1 to take away. We just wanted to demonstrate the kind of generosity Jesus talks about and do something that people wouldn't expect. Most people were surprised. Some were genuinely taken aback, and a handful were completely freaked out by our generosity. It was an unexpected response. I think it would take to be about a fiver nowadays to make the same impact. God gives to us and enriches our lives so that we can give to others and enrich their lives. Nicky Gumbel sums it up like this: "Money is to be used, but not loved. Don't love money and use people. Love people and use money." And that was written by Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church at Bar End.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you got the first one?
And this one from Eileen Berry, headed Small-Minded. "I honestly didn't expect that I should continue to work against the hospital and A&E departments closing down. But you see, people who have been reading the letters in the Hampshire Chronicle are infuriated at the supposed running down of especially the A&E department, or indeed the hospital, have asked me not to stop. I do know that there have been signatures given in the region of, I believe, 23,000 to 25,000 people against the closure. But there's an army of people out there who feel that whatever they do, whatever they say, it will make no difference. The truth is, as I have said to them, do what I am doing. Send to the Hampshire Chronicle your letters, because together we stand. That being said, within the last 10 years, rumours have been circulating about the closure of the hospital itself. So the reason that surgeons, good doctors, specialists don't come forward is because of the uncertainty of the future. So I suspect that those trusts that run the hospital have been running the services down and making Winchester Hospital, which was, by the way, a jewel in the crown, and I can speak from knowledge, it's been gradually run down, disregarding the population explosion, the general movement programs of massive buildings, housing, and there is speculation why you would get rid of a listed building that was once hailed as the best you could have. If Florence Nightingale believed that to be absolutely the best place to build the hospital, what has changed? I think what has changed is the management. They're willing to forget the immediate needs of the people of Winchester and district to be able to get to that hospital without worrying about how to get there. To tell you the truth, I feel so angry and surprised at the small-mindedness and disregard of the wishes of people. In a way, I wouldn't mind standing against Winchester Hospital with a large plaque in support of keeping it all going. I can't do that on my own." And that's from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And Roger and Una Stevens write Profligate. "Following recent letters in the Hampshire Chronicle, June the 20th and July the 4th, we continue to deplore the vast amount of money spent by the Liberal Democrats on the flyers, pamphlets and letters which flooded our homes during the election campaign. Some were hand-delivered by volunteers, others arrived by post, an additional cost. Even though we asked Danny Chambers for the deluge to cease, our request was totally ignored. They kept flooding in. All this was quite unnecessary, as enough people would have voted against the Tories to cause Mr. Chambers to be elected, even if he had not bothered to campaign at all. We were also submitted to gross surfeit of laminated posters, at least 8 along one garden hedge alone. Liberal Democrats winning here. Although Danny Chambers was triumphant, we know the number of local people who switched their vote from him as they were so incensed by the expense of the promotional overkill to which they had been submitted. Imagine our further discomfort when we received a letter from Mark Dixon, CEO of the Liberal Democrats, informing us this election cost us everything we had, admitting, but right now we cannot afford to continue. Not only is it such a profligate use of their financial resources, risible, but it does not augur well for the party's ability to comprehend wise budgeting on a national scale. Nevertheless, with their coffers empty, Mr. Dixon claims that it will be his party's responsibility alone to push for the right approach to Europe, to the economy, to a fairer society, to the environment, to education, and to international cooperation, alongside many others where Liberal Democrat values are central. Hubris writ large. Although invited, we did not attend the Liberal Democrats' celebratory party at the Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium on Friday, July the 12th. It represents yet more squandered resources. And that's from Roger and Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
And we have this letter entitled Glorious Voices, which I will do my best with. It's a wet Friday evening, and the garden is beginning to come to life again after the recent dry spell. What does this have to do with the concert? The answer is listening to the glorious singing of 12 voices in a concert entitled A Garden of Delights. St. Peter's Church in Stockbridge welcomed the world-class ensemble Style Antico, who presented a program that celebrated the beginnings of spring, the flowering of nature and of love, and the usual Renaissance music themes of nymphs and shepherds. The 12 unaccompanied voices blended in perfect harmony and created variety through their program, with a judicious grouping of similarly themed texts, and also by varying the number of singers for certain pieces and changing singing positions. The Bible's Song of Songs has provided many composers with the challenge to match the gentle and sometimes quite open eroticism of this text with music that contains the emotions. Palestrina provided the perfect opening for this concert. But here was music by a master of sacred polyphony, but now in a daring situation which serenaded the awakenings of nature and by implication the first stirrings of love. There was a lot more biblical innuendo scattered throughout the concert, all sung with immaculate intonation, but also with infectious enthusiasm. Each group of pieces were introduced by a member of the choir, providing a light-hearted yet informative background to the music. Among the many highlights were the magnificent polychoral exchanges in Tota Pulchra, S. A. Praetorius, the beautiful soft singing in Wilby's melancholy Draw On, Sweet Night, the humour of Josquin's El Grino, brilliantly punning on his friend's name, and the wonderfully restrained sensualism of Ceballo's Hortus Conclusus, a stunning performance of Hugh Watkins' commission The Phoenix and the Turtle, ended this recital. Fabulous singing, and that's from Duncan Eves, Goring Field, Take Down, Winchester.
And the next letter is headed Force Responds. There's a letter from Superintendent Rob Brind, Hampshire Constabulary, replying to the letter from John Seager Green, which was in the Chronicle last week, criticising the difficulty in contacting the police after an incident in St Cross Road. Superintendent Brind writes, "There are a number of different ways members of the community can get in touch with us. Those wanting to contact us about general matters, as well as reporting non-emergency incidents or crimes, can use 101 or report online. Matters can also be reported in person at one of our police stations. And opening hours can be found on our website, hampshire.police.uk. If there is a danger to life, a crime is happening at that time or has just happened, you have immediate concerns for safety, or you see something suspicious that needs immediate attention, then you should dial 999. If you'd like to speak to your local neighbourhood officer, their details can be found on our website. In this situation, where it was deemed a vehicle was in a dangerous position with an immediate risk of serious injury, it could have been reported as an emergency via 999. However, the local authority should be the first point of contact for other traffic management and parking issues. And that letter was from Superintendent Rob Brind, Hampshire Constabulary.
And this from Simon Lever. Oh, no, sorry. No, it is from Simon Lever, headed Not Viable. Plans for a 6,000-home estate at Mitchell-Dever Station are not viable for a number of reasons, chronicled July the 11th. First of all, the number of homes would demand doctors' surgeries, shops and schools. Second issue, at very least 1,200 vehicles, even if electric. The infrastructure would not take it. Third issue, pollution. Sewage from 6,000 households. River pollution is already a serious problem, where water companies seem to lack proactive initiative regardless of high funding from residents. Consider the morphing plans for Bushfield Camp, which became more expansive with each plan introduced, with masses of vehicles. Once again, the infrastructure would not be able to cope. There must be many locations where houses can be built without a threat to the broader locality and preserve previous greenfield areas for future generations. And that from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this letter is entitled Whole Story. We know that potholes are a major concern for people in Hampshire and across the county, affecting daily journeys and overall satisfaction with the roads, whether you're commuting to work, on the school run, waiting for deliveries for your business, or enjoying a weekend bike ride along the county's rural routes. They impact our quality of life and our local economy. It's been a year now since we allocated additional money dedicated to make Hampshire's roads stronger and tackle record number of reported potholes, committed an extra £22.5 million over 2 years to boost road repairs. This significant investment in Hampshire has enabled us to deploy more resources dedicated to fixing potholes promptly. From April 2023 to April 2024, we have repaired 189,000 potholes and road defects, representing a huge 37% increase compared to the previous 12 months. We've also mended or resurfaced 389 kilometres of our roads at 510 locations. During the summer, the generally dry, warmer weather makes it an ideal time to strengthen our roads, helping to reverse damage caused by winter erosion and deterioration. And our crews are out there making the most of this period to keep filling potholes, smooth road surfaces, and restore our roads, including the larger stretches of the county's roads. With unprecedented volumes of potholes being reported to us, Hampshire isn't alone in facing the challenges of keeping local roads in good condition. The impact of colder, wetter winters these days takes its toll on the roads, and a higher cost due to inflation means that every year we must do more within our limited budgets, for example. It now costs the taxpayer around about 44% more to repair a pothole. As the county councillor with responsibility for Hampshire's highways, delivering stronger roads to keep Hampshire moving is my firm commitment to the county's residents. Road defects and potholes can be reported to the county's council's highway team online, hants.gov.uk www.transport/highways or by using our Hans app, downloadable from a phone app store. And that's from Councillor Lulu Bowerman, Executive Member for Highways and Waste, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
Time to act. I recently attended a workshop in the Oliver's Battery on some of the issues of climate change. This is a hugely important issue, perhaps the most important in our time. We all need education and we all need to change our lifestyle. We were shown how CO2 is affecting our oceans in different ways. Figures presented showed UK residents contributing around 12 tonnes of CO2 per person. And we need to get that figure towards 2. It seems to me that government, both national and local, need to spend much more time and effort on this topic. It should be a compulsory study in schools and universities. Because the subject is complex, I can see this is going to take time. However, I also see the matter is now extremely urgent. I thought I knew a lot, but sadly that is not the case. My fear is that lack of action will be catastrophic to our planet. So the time to act is now. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And this last letter has a wonderful set of photographs of some rose blooms, red, white and a pink one, and they're attached to railings, and they are in Parchment Street, and it says, Oases of Beauty on a Busy City Street. And the letter's from Mary Pearson. It says, to walk along Parchment Street when the roses there are in bloom is a real joy. I am grateful to residents of this city centre street for creating oases of beauty from small front gardens on a busy Winchester street. And that's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winall. Now we move on to editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, Waiting to Hear About Plans for Former Depot. We all know about the pace of new development is glacial in Winchester. The redevelopment of Silver Hill has been on the cards since the late 1980s, station approach for most of this century. Bar End Depot is of a slightly shorter time frame. The former City Council Works Depot off Bar End has been empty for several years after its workers downsized to nearby Barfield Close. The City Council has been looking to redevelop the land and been seeking ideas. Needed to say, nothing much has appeared to have happened, although to be fair, the COVID interlude did not help matters. Many ideas have been put forward, including commercial use, housing and retail. A public exhibition was held in 2022. Now the council is poised to reveal its preferred bidder. The announcement had been due on Tuesday, but it has been delayed until September. The cabinet meeting on Tuesday reported on our front page, heard from community activist Janet Berry, a long-time Highcliffe resident and a dynamic voice for the estate. She is calling very clearly for the depot to be used as a, quote, community hub. That is a good idea for an area lacking in such facilities. It would boost community spirit and help to tackle chronic problems such as loneliness, social dislocation and mental health issues. The City Council has listened to those voices of local people from the Highcliffe and Bar End. However, it is more likely to opt for a development that also brings financial benefit. But you never know, the Chronicle might be pleasantly surprised. We will see.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And this is Don't Look the Other Way by Khalid Aziz. I've been in and out of prison pretty much all my life. No surprise there, I hear close friends muttering. Seriously, for various reasons, I have visited several jails and what the Home Office used to call incarcerative institutions, from Category A jails for dangerous criminals to young offender institutions for callow youths covering up their fearful insecurities with outrageous bravado. I've been to open prisons and highly secure establishments such as Broadmoor, Rampton and Ashworth, now rebranded special hospitals, housing the so-called criminally insane, including the likes of the infamous Ronnie Cray, until his death in 1995. My first experience of prison life came when, aged 11, I was playing with a school friend in his garden. His father was Governor of Wandsworth, and their house was attached to the prison. Suddenly, a bell of Toscan volume pierced the warm July air, and my chum's father flew down the steps of the house straight into the prison. Train robber Ronnie Briggs had just gone over the wall at the start of what was to become decades on the lam. In adult life, I was to interview prison governors and advise Home Office civil servants on communicating more effectively about the challenges of housing criminals to wider audiences, including what they called the public, who often just wanted to lock 'em up and throw away the key. What's clear is that the vast majority of the 90,000 currently banged up shouldn't be there at all. Most of are affected by the twin scourges of drug addiction and or mental health issues. Very few are really threats to society. What singles out all prisons is the sheer despair. The inmates are desperate. The officers and others charged with looking after the prisoners are desperate too. The stress levels in our jails are immense. As a past victim of violent crime myself, I know how strongly the urge for revenge and retribution can well up immediately after the attack. The sense of defilement felt by those who have been burgled or mugged is palpable. But somehow a civilized society needs to rise above knee-jerk reactions. We want things put right, but how? Nearly 30 years ago, the head of Hampshire Probation Service, who sat on my Prince's Trust Committee, introduced me to the then relative new concept of restorative justice. It wasn't for everyone, but where a criminal showed genuine remorse and only if the victim consented, the criminal had to confront his crime with the victim and articulating their feelings, often with astonishing results. With the then Prince of Wales support, we tried something even more radical, mediation. There had been a significant reduction in stress levels in jails abroad, where it had been tried in places like Senegal. The Governor of Winchester Prison enthusiastically agreed to a pilot. We raised the funding and were set to go. And then there was a change of governor. He told me, in terms that the prisoners didn't deserve such mollycoddling. No doubt he sought reflecting views of the public and, of course, the Daily Mail. Our pilot stress reduction plan was dead in the water. And so we come to today's pretty pass. Our jails are full. Police and courts are being encouraged not to keep sending miscreants. Many inmates are being released having served 40% of their sentence rather than the customary 50%, a norm which already surprised and outraged many of the public. The majority of those released early will reoffend within a year, not really surprising when they are discharged with just a few quid and precious little support, having learned new lessons in felony at the feet of the hardened fellow inmates. There's truth in the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. So too does it take all of society to reform a criminal. So don't turn your head, don't look the other way.
Thank you. Now we have an article from Belgarum, please, Andrew.
And this is an alternative look at the news, and it's headlined Contentious Cricket. According to the Guardian's obituary in 2023, the very Reverend Trevor Beeson was a warm and approachable figure. So some might be surprised by a certain competitive streak in the late Dean of Winchester, writes Sebastian Hoare. The episode that revealed this trait is in his memoirs, A Dean's Diary, Winchester 1987 to 1996, where he describes a 1994 edition of an annual cricket match held between the boy choristers and the clergy, in which he found himself as one of the tail-enders with 10 runs to win. He wrote, "This afternoon's cricket match between the choristers and the Dean and Chapter 11 was, as usual, great fun, but ended unusually." He goes on to explain how the boys had gone in to bat first, scoring 118, before the clergy's middle order made 60 and collapsed. This left the Dean and his batting partner with just 10 runs to win the match. Then this happened. A series of singles reduced the target to 4, whereupon young Nathaniel Lipiat delivered me a fast full toss which, by some freak action, I struck to the boundary. That the Dean, in his 69th year, had won the match for his side by hitting a 4 in the last wicket stand caused great hilarity, but not on the part of the headmaster, who seemed to regret that the age-old tradition of the choristers being allowed to win the match had been broken. Obviously, this must not happen again, and that will surely be the last boundary I shall ever hit on a cricket ground. But maybe the choristers will value their future victories all the more because of this reminder that they are not unbeatable.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements. We start with what's on. Three items. Firstly, at the Theatre Royal on Thursday the 25th of July at 7:30 p.m, Beyond the Barricade. It's 2 hours of live music with the best from Broadway and the West End. You can enjoy music from The Phantom of the Opera, Jesus Christ Superstar, West Side Story, The Lion King, Blood Brothers, Miss Saigon, Hamilton, and a big finale of songs from Les Miserables. So that's Thursday the 25th of July, 7:30 p.m, and you can get details from the Theatre Royal box office. Secondly, the Winchester Festival of Archaeology. The Archaeology Festival is set to explore fraud prevention in medieval and Tudor England. It's between the 19th and the 21st, so it's this weekend, of July. And one of the solutions used wax seals, and Hyde 900 is offering the opportunity for visitors of all ages to make and take away a faithful replica of the seal of 1537. The original is held at Winchester College, and Jacob Newbury and Chris Pryor are using traditional engraving and modelling methods to create this, and Chris will be on hand during the seal making to discuss the project. It's open to all ages, and those taking part can take away their seal, certified by the Abbot of Hyde. Well, his stand-in. In addition, the festival will feature medieval tile making, calligraphy, a display of finds from the digs, and a talk by Dr. John Crook titled "There's a Monk at the Bottom of My Garden." And for more details, you can visit hyde900.org.uk. Finally, for the Watercress line, for the summer holiday entertainment period, the Watercress line includes visits from the children's characters Bluey and Bingo from the 9th to the 11th of August, and they're doing Days Out with Thomas the Tank Engine from the 21st to the 25th of August. If you want more information on special events on the Watercress line during the summer holiday, you can visit www.watercressline.co.uk. A lighting up time ends Friday the 19th of July at 5:13 a.m. and begins at 9:09 p.m. And on Wednesday the 24th of July it ends at 5:20 a.m. and begins at 9:03 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
Had it St. Swithin's Day. Are we fated to a rainy summer? St. Swithin's Day has come again, and joy of joys, it was still raining. Legend has it that if it rains on July the 15th, it will continue to rain for 40 days. This is all to do with St. Swithin, who, after his death in 863 AD, asked to be buried in the churchyard of Winchester Cathedral, then Old Minster, so the sweet rain from heaven might wet his grave, quote. Unfortunately, this meant that after a century or so, his resting place had become, quote, vile and unworthy grave, according to a group of devoted monks who decided to move the body into the cathedral. As soon as they tried to do so, however, a sudden deluge, allegedly caused by St. Swithin's outrage, drenched the funeral party and it rained non-stop for nearly 7 weeks, forcing the exhumation to be abandoned. This is why, if it rains on the day the monks tried to dig him up, July the 15th, it will rain for 40 days. Alternatively, if it is sunny, the good weather will continue for the same period. That is how the story goes, anyway. But for the Met Office issued a yellow weather warning today, do we really need to worry about a miserable end to the summer? Fact or fiction? St. Swithin performed his fair share of miracles, including magicking a basket full of broken eggs back to their original condition. While not everyone might believe that, it does seem that the St. Swithin's Day phenomenon is not entirely a myth, with some scientific evidence backing the idea that the rest of the summer will be wet if it rains in mid-July. This has to do with the Gulf Stream, which usually brings consistently fine summer weather until September. That said, since records began in 1861, there has never been a record of 40 dry or 40 wet days in a row following St. Swithin's Day.
Treasury reveals 9 unclaimed estates. You could be entitled to a fortune through one of the unclaimed estates that has been left behind in Winchester. There are currently 9 estates in the city which have passed to the Crown as ownerless property. This happens when a person dies without leaving a will, and there are no apparent family members to claim the inheritance. In general, estates held on the list can be claimed within a 12-year deadline from the date the estate was taken into the possession of the Crown. The Treasury will allow claims up to 30 years from the date of the person's death for unclaimed estates dating before 1997, subject to no interest being paid on the money that is held. If the claim is received after the 12-year period has ended. The list of unclaimed estates is updated and published daily on the government's website. You could be entitled to a share of a deceased relative's property. Simply type in your name below to see if you're sitting on a fortune. Who is entitled to an unclaimed estate? If someone dies without leaving a valid or effective will, the following relations are entitled to the estate in the order shown below. 1. Husband, wife or civil partner. 2. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren and so on. 3. Mother or father. 4. Brothers or sisters who share both the same mother and father, or their children, nieces and nephews. 5. Half-brothers or sisters or their children, nieces and nephews of the half-blood, or their children. Half means that they share only one parent with the deceased. Recommended reading. Warning issued over failing to use a solicitor to write a will. 10 of the strangest things left by people in wills revealed. Martin Lewis urges couples living together to discuss their wills. 6. Grandparents. 7. Uncles and aunts or their children, first cousins or their descendants. 8. Half uncles and aunts or their children, first cousins of the half-blood or their children. Half means that they only share one grandparent with the deceased, not both. If you are, for example, a first cousin of the deceased, you would only be entitled to a share in the estate if there are no relatives above you in the order of entitlement, for example, a niece and nephew. Well, I hope you all understood that, because it's quite complicated. And there is a picture of someone writing a will, and then there's a pile of £2 and £1 coins with little red houses on the top of them. So good luck with that.
I'm still trying to understand it. Right, protection from COVID. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight lead the South East region with the most number of people protected from COVID-19. Following the 2024 spring programme, more than 180,000 eligible individuals took the vaccine, making the region deliver the national third highest vaccinations delivered by the NHS Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The uptake level was 65.7%, marking the highest in the South East and the fifth across the country. Dr. Matt Nisbet, clinical lead for the COVID vaccination program at NHS Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, said, "This phenomenal achievement could not have happened without a huge amount of hard work and collaboration between the primary care networks, community pharmacies, and the COVID-19 vaccination program team, who glue all the bits of the system together. Our new roving vaccination vehicle was also launched this spring, which has helped us reach members of our local communities who may not have otherwise come forward. I would like to thank all of the teams across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight who've taken part in the campaign, which has led to the highest levels of vaccination rates across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. This will ultimately keep people and communities safe and healthy."
Bishop blesses pilgrimage route bronze shell. The Bishop of Winchester blessed a bronze shell which marks a significant place on the pilgrim route. The Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen was at the Hospital of St. Cross on Thursday, July the 11th. The bronze Camino shell marks part of the route to Santiago de Compostela, the burial site of the biblical apostle St. James. As well as the bishop, Brother John Switzer, Reverend Dominic Chmielewski, Master of the Hospital of St. Cross and Almshouse of Nova Property, and David Sinclair, member of the coordinator of the Confraternity of St. James, attended. The bishop said, "The ancient Hospital of St. Cross is a place of rest and refuge for pilgrims today, just as it's been for centuries. It was a joy to bless the bronze shell that marks it as a significant place on the pilgrim route to Santiago de Compostela and to speak of the rest and refreshment any of us can find in God today." And there's a lovely photograph of the four of them. There's one of the brothers in the full black regalia and the flat hat and the staff or whatever, and then the bishop and various others. But the shell is inset into a very ancient stone wall behind. It's probably only about 6 or 8 inches, I can't do centimetres, in size. But it's amazing that it's actually linked to the Santiago de Compostela pilgrimage.
Bus damaged in A31 crash. Shocking photos show the damage to a stagecoach bus after a crash on a major road near Winchester. The A31 Alsford Road was closed yesterday morning, July the 17th, westbound between Rodfield Lane and the Percy Hobbs roundabout. 5 people were hurt, with 1 person taken to hospital in Basingstoke. The others were treated at the scene. Photos show a seriously damaged number 64 bus. Eyewitness Christina Fernley of Alsford Road said, "This is just one of many horrifying accidents that have occurred on this road. I'm thankful to hear that there were no fatalities this morning, but it's only a matter of time before there is." A police spokesman said police were called at 8:25 a.m. this morning to a collision on the Alsford Road. The collision involved a bus, a van and a car. And there's a picture of the bus. It looks as though it's well into the verge, and the front windscreen is completely shattered.
Cathedral plan for Jane Austen statue. Winchester Cathedral has submitted a planning application to install a statue of Jane Austen in the cathedral grounds. As previously reported, the cathedral has been planning to erect a statue of the famous author outside of Number 9, the Close, to mark 250 years since her birth. The statue has proven to be controversial, with an Austen expert warning that it could turn Winchester into, and I quote, Disneyland on Itchen, while Phil Howe of Jane Austen Tours wrote to the Chronicle accusing the cathedral of cynical cultural misappropriation. Winchester Cathedral has now submitted a planning application for the statue to the City Council. The application confirms that the statue by sculptor Martin Jennings will be constructed from brass and placed on the lawn in the inner close outside Number 9. The planning application says the sculpture is proposed to be set against the backdrop of the three-gabled stone building of Number 9, which was built as a cannon housing in the 1660s. The location has been chosen specifically because of tranquil domestic setting, resonating with the recurring themes of family bonds and lives in Austen's writing. More importantly, this location is along her funeral procession route, and a path she would have taken during her lifetime when visiting her nephews in Winchester College, or her friends living at the then Number 12. The application says that the cathedral intends to create a permanent legacy to commemorate Jane Austen's contribution to English literature and to mark her association with Winchester as an integral part of the city's cultural and historical identity. It continued, the statue would become a staging post for the tours given by the city guides and the start of a new trail, beginning in the close with the sculpture of one woman and ending with the statue of another, of Licorice, in Jury Street.
Captain Vince, victim of Home of Tax. Hampshire Captain James Vince has appealed to the public for information on repeated attacks on his property that forced him and his family out. England cricketer Vince, 33, lives in a village just east of Southampton and has been there for 8 years with no trouble. However, this year, Vince and his family have been the victims of two attacks on their property, which have seen his home and vehicles vandalised. Vince has described waking up to the sound of glass smashing and alarms blaring, while CCTV footage shows the perpetrator throwing objects through his windows. The first attack happened in the second week of April, and another just under a month later, a week after Vince and his family had returned following repairs. In a new interview with The Telegraph, Vince said, "All the experts we've spoken to say it looks like a money issue, unpaid debts or something. We have nothing to hide, and know we have never been involved in anything like this. We just desperately want this to stop. If anyone knows anything or sees anything in the footage of the attack that could lead to anything, please contact us or Hampshire Police. It could be the final piece of information we need to find out what is going on and get our lives back to normal." And there's a picture of Captain James Vince looking in his baseball cap for cricket, looking very worried and concerned, as you would imagine.
Ukrainian musicians bring an evening of opera to church. An evening of operatic classics from Bellini to Verdi has been held in solidarity with Ukrainian expats, soprano Katarana Bokovenech and pianist Lilia Solomonova performed a spellbinding series of arias from some of the genre's best-known composers. The concert, organised by the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association, took place at St Paul's Church on Friday, 12th of July. The musicians mixed classical arias with Ukrainian folk-inspired tunes, as well as some Neapolitan standards like Torna del Sorrento. A particularly striking rendition of Casa Diva from Bellini's Norma accompanied the more complex and mournful but no less beautiful tones from a performer's homeland. The concert's organiser, Oliana Habrenkyuk, 48, who is herself an opera singer, explained the mission of the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association. She said, "We have had a few artists, but these artists are professionals. Katerina works in London and she moved to the UK just when the war started. Honestly, this association was created to bring people together and for integration. We have a lot of our very talented people here, and our aim is to create a platform so they can do something if they have a project. This is the first time we have done a classical concert, and I'm pretty sure we will be doing another one soon." And there are three pictures. One is the inside of St. Peter's Church with the grand piano and the lady singing. I'm not even going to try and pronounce her names again. And the other one is playing the piano. And there's another picture of a close-up of her singing an aria. And then the final one is the two of them holding hands and holding their bouquets.
Newsreader supports charity at a coffee morning. A top newsreader has shown his support for a Winchester charity at its latest coffee morning. More than £300 was raised by the Winchester branch of Homestart, a charity which supports young families in need, at Rick Stein's restaurant in the High Street on July the 12th. Dozens of supporters attended, including the charity's patron, ex-ITV and GB news journalist Alistair Stewart, OBE. He said he was keen to show his support for the charity's good work. Trustee Sue Gentry said, "Homestart is increasingly reliant on donations from supporters, sponsorship from local businesses, and our own fundraising to support our work with young families. We must raise over 90% of our annual income every year, which is why we are so grateful to supporters like Rick Stein for allowing us to use their premises to fundraise. Homestart Winchester offers weekly home visits by volunteers within a 12-mile radius of Winchester and hosts activity groups once a week in their bases in Kingsworthy and Eastleigh. The charity aims to provide support to both children and parents alike, particularly those who are living with additional needs, those with a lack of parenting experience, and poor mental health. This is the second Homestart Winchester event this year, hosted at Rick Stein's, with a charity lunch held earlier this year in January. Rick Stein's Winchester restaurant will be hosting other events to support the community, including more coffee mornings later this year for charities such as the Children's Society and the Winchester and District Young Carers. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Alistair Stewart, and I assume his wife, Sally Stewart, and as well as them, they've got Alex and Clemmie Stewart standing in the entrance to Rick Stein's restaurant.
Standing room only as former choristers return. There was standing room only in the choir, Q-U-I-R-E, of Winchester Cathedral as more than 100 former choristers returned to sing with the current choir for the very last time under the leadership of Director of Music Andrew Lumsden. The Winchester Cathedral Old Chorister Association holds a reunion each year, but the numbers this year, on Sunday, July the 7th, were exceptional as so many returned to thank Dr. Lumsden, who leaves the cathedral at the end of the Southern Cathedrals Festival. Choral music at Winchester Cathedral has been rocked by a management crisis that has persuaded the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mann-Stephen, to launch a review. One of the nation's most respected organists and choir directors, Dr. Lumsden, has conducted the world-renowned choir for 22 years, over which time they have performed across the world, made numerous recordings, appeared on television and in film, sung at high-profile weddings and notable funerals, and has been the choir chosen to sing at key state events. And there's a wonderful photograph of them all in the choir, taken from a sort of bird's-eye view, looking up with Miss Dr. Lumsden right at the front, all looking extremely happy to be with him.
6,000 hectares of wildlife habitat. The South Downs National Park is halfway to reaching its ambitious goal of transforming 13,000 hectares into wildlife habitat by 2030. Launched exactly 3 years ago, the Rewilding Initiative has already seen the creation or enhancement of 6,082 hectares of nature-rich spaces. The total area, equaling over 20,000 football pitches, surpasses the size of Worthing or Portsmouth. Work on the project has included the planting of nearly 50,000 trees, the addition of 100 hectares of wildflowers, hedge planting, pond restoration and habitat improvement benefiting chalk grassland and lowland heath. Similar agreements have safeguarded parts of the national park territory on farms and larger estates for nature throughout biodiversity net gain initiatives. The national park operates over 350 varied projects with external partners aimed at promoting natural recovery. New features span wildlife meadows, hedgerows, wetlands, heathlands, woodlands and chalk grasslands. Culminating with the ReNature Festival, a week-long celebration of nature themed around the four B's, bees, butterflies, birds and bats, all iconic species in the South Downs. Scheduled from July the 20th to July the 28th, many informative and enjoyable activities, walks and discussions will be available across Sussex and Hampshire. Visitors to national park centres in Midhurst and at Seven Sisters Country Park can obtain a pledge and plant postcard filled with wildflower seeds. Tim Slannery, Chief Executive Interim of the National Park, said, "It's wonderful to be reaching the halfway point in this initiative, and absolutely none of it would have been possible without the support of the local communities, landowners, farmers, businesses and volunteers. With almost 1,500 native species of plants and animals in the UK now threatened with extinction, nature needs us now more than ever. We want nature to thrive everywhere for everyone, not only for biodiversity, bouncing back, but also people's health and well-being. National parks can and should be the nation's nature recovery hubs, and we prove that we can do it and do it well."
Senior Citizens Club folds after 45 years. A senior citizens club in Winchester has closed after more than 45 years helping people. Members of the Rainbow Club played bingo and enjoyed a light tea to mark the last day. Everyone received a leaving gift and a celebration cake was cut by Gwen Dyke, the club's leader. A few supporters from the community attended, and Gwen's daughter and granddaughter joined in too. Gwen said, "I'm very sad for the group to end and disappointed that a new leader couldn't be found. My favourite memories are of the holidays that they took together, coach trips to various locations and Christmas dinners. I'm going to miss meeting other members and know others will miss this too. All the remaining money left in the club's pot will be donated to Winchester Hospice." The Red Cross Rainbow Club was founded in 1978 for the senior citizens of the Stanmore Estate. Numbers were capped at 70, and there was a waiting list for new members. In 1980, Gwen, a local resident, took over the leadership of the group and has continued to do so for 44 years. Now she is approaching 87 years old, and she felt that the time had come to step down from leadership. In the mid-1980s, the Red Cross funding came to an end, and a committee was formed to run the club with its own funds, and it then became just the Rainbow Club. Pre-COVID attendance numbers had dropped to 35 to 40, and after COVID only reached 18 to 20. This was another reason the club came to a natural end. And there's a picture of, I suppose, all of the remaining members of the club sitting outside the club after their light lunch. And a great achievement by Gwen, 44 years leading the club. Well done.
Plea for unity at County Council. Hampshire County Council's leader has urged all the county's MPs to, quote, work together, regardless of the party they represent, for the benefit of the 1.4 million residents. Labour's landslide victory in the general election has changed the country's and Hampshire's electoral map. The previously blue-dominated Hampshire is now splattered with orange and red after the Liberal Democrats and Labour won more seats. In Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, including the three unitary authorities, the change of party has been seen in places such as Portsmouth North, where the former leader of the House of Commons, Penny Mordaunt, lost to Labour's Amanda Martin, who won with a majority of 780. Labour gained seats from the Conservatives in Southampton Itchen, Basingstoke, Isle of Wight West and Aldershot. In some cases, the Tories had held the seats for more than 14 years, like in the case of the Isle of Wight West seat, held since 1997. Meanwhile, in Winchester, Eastleigh and North East Hampshire, Liberal Democrats were elected. With MPs from three parties now representing Hampshire at Westminster, the County Council sent a positive message to them, emphasising their crucial role in representing the area and a wish to work together for the benefit of residents. Councillor Nick Adams-King said, "The people of Hampshire have spoken, and we have a new cohort of MPs to represent us in Parliament. Some of them are returning, and some of them are new. I'd like to welcome them all and congratulate them on their victories in the general election. Hampshire is a wonderful county to represent. We have a vibrant economy, wonderful towns and cities, and fantastic countryside. I hope they enjoy their terms over the next few years, representing us all. I firmly believe no one enters politics to do harm. We just disagree on the way in which we do good. And as such, I'm looking forward to working with all of them, no matter which party they represent, to work together to represent the people of Hampshire and do all that we can to make Hampshire an even better place for us all to live."
New shed at allotments after generous donation. A new shed was officially opened in Alresford after generous donations. The new Alresford Allotment Society's shed was unveiled by Charmaine Jones, a trustee of the Alresford Show, who donated £1,000. Councillor Johnny Dakin from New Alresford Town Council said, "This is a group made up of people of all ages and from all walks of life. Although everyone has their own plot and their own little worlds, the need and want for a communal shed and equipment is a testament to the strong sense of community and togetherness here. The NATC is proud to contribute. It's the next few months NATC is delivering a brand new allotment site along Spring Gardens. Even though there is a waiting list, I would encourage any Alresford resident with an interest in becoming a plot holder to sign up now and be part of this great local community. The main allotment site of Spring Gardens opened in 2005 on the initiative of the then Town Councillor John Cattle. He argued that there would be a strong demand for allotments if the Town Council provided them, and was proved right by the rapid need for a waiting list. It did have a shed, but it was little used and removed after a couple of years." And there's a lovely picture of Charmaine Jones cutting a red ribbon with this lovely, bright new shed behind them and two very large water butts.
Basics Bank still seeing increased demand. Winchester Basics Bank has held its annual general meeting. The meeting at the United Church in Jury Street reviewed the progress made since the group was set up in 2004. New statistics show that in 2023, demand for the service rose 34% from 2022, with the food bank serving 7,081 people across the Winchester district last year. The food bank's holiday lunch scheme was also discussed, and in 2023 the scheme saw 167 families with a total of 345 children provided with 10 weeks' worth of weekday lunches while the schools were on holiday. Volunteers were thanked for their work with the Basics Bank. However, charity chiefs also spoke of a large amount of new referrals to the service due to the cost of living crisis. While inflation is going down, the charity said that basic food prices are remaining high, with Winchester Basics Bank meeting three times the pre-pandemic demand, complementing additional demand met by food pantries in Winchester. The bank is also facing a gap between demand and the amount of food donated by the community. This has resulted in more than £1,500 of supermarket purchases being made each week to fill the gap. On a more positive note, the meeting heard the collaborative work between Winchester Basics Bank, Unit 12 Pantry, and the Carroll Centre Pantry is helping the community. The meeting closed with a word of thanks to the volunteers, as well as the churches, corporations, and charities who provide resources. However, there remains a call for further help and new business models to meet the expected rise in demand. And this is accompanied by a photograph taken at the Basics Bank with Director Leona Money and the Operations Manager, Angus Kirk, and standing in front of lots and lots and lots of boxes that they are preparing and working on.
Residents face near 50% hike in water bills. Residents across Hampshire will face a near 50% increase in their bills over the next 5 years. Southern Water has been given permission to increase bills by 44%, or £183. The increase was approved by regulator Ofwat on Thursday. But water companies had wanted to increase bills higher than the increase they were allowed. The average increase across the country of £19 a year is a third less than the companies had requested. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has called for more personal responsibility at the top of the water industry. Asked whether it was unfair if heavily indebted Thames Water tried to hike bills again, and whether he is prepared to nationalise the firm if it went bust, Sir Keir said, "I don't want bills to be so punishing for people. So we will have a plan to get the grips with that in terms of governance of water. But that requires us to deal with both the pollution and the bill side of it." The proposed bill increases come amid public fury around firms' polluting of waterways with sewage spills as they continue to hand dividends to shareholders and bonuses to executives, something which Labour has pledged to clamp down on. Sewage spills in England's rivers and seas more than doubled in 2023.
Freemasons cash boosts to youth charity. A grant of more than £60,000 has been donated from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons to the Romsey-based Youth Options charity. Up to 30 local families dealing with children showing challenging behaviours such as violence, self-harm and refusing to attend school will receive more help. The £64,685 grant will support Youth Options Families Together project over 3 years through intensive non-violence resistance NVR courses for parents, with the additional of one-to-one and small groups for young people. Through Youth Options NVR courses, parents and carers will receive the tools needed to help break down the barriers and address the issues that may be leading to these destructive behaviours. Additionally, the programme will focus on all aspects of family life to support changes that improve life for everyone involved. The grant from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons comes through the Masonic Charitable Foundation. Madeleine Dury, Youth Options Chief Executive, said, "We are very grateful to Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Freemasons for their generous grant. At Youth Options, we pride ourselves on the level of support we offer children and young people across the county. Our courses aim to reduce violent behaviour and build positive relationships. Every family, child and young person deserves the opportunity to lead a positive life, and thanks to the Freemasons, more local families will have this chance. John Whittaker, the head of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons, said, "Tackling violence within families is a complex and difficult task, but we can have a huge consequences for the young people involved and other family members. It's no exaggeration to say that the work you do can transform lives."
Lorna has raised £2,800 for a brain cancer cause. Funeral donations totalling more than £2,800 in memory of a Bishop's Waltham man who died from an aggressive brain tumour will fund research to help find a cure for the disease. Simon Camsell, an engineer, died aged 58 in November 2021, having been diagnosed with a glioblastoma brain tumour, GBM, 2.5 years earlier. The most commonly diagnosed aggressive brain tumour in adults, with just 25% of patients surviving more than a year with a GBM, and dropping to just 5% surviving more than 5 years. On July the 10th, Simon's wife Jane and sons Charlie, 27, and Tom, 25, were invited to the Brain Tumour Research Centre of Excellence at Queen Mary University of London to find out how their fundraising is helping support scientists leading the way in research into GBM. Simon's diagnosis came about after he started having headaches, which became so bad that they'd wake him in the night. And one day, while gardening, Simon hit his head with a tool and ended up with a terrible headache while also losing his peripheral vision. At A&E, a CT scan revealed a mass in his brain, which was later confirmed to be a tumour. He underwent surgery, followed by radiotherapy and chemotherapy. When there was a regrowth of the tumour, Simon had more surgery and more chemotherapy until he decided to stop treatment. Jane, a former primary school teacher, said, "Simon and I met when I was 21 and he'd just left university. It would have been our 30th wedding anniversary last year. We always thought we'd grow old together and had plans to continue travelling once he'd retired. I'll never forget the amazing holiday we had in Vietnam to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary." It was emotional placing Simon's tile on the Wall of Hope. "I still can't believe that his cancer was incurable, and so much funding seems to go into researching other forms of cancer, while brain tumours lag so far behind. It's some comfort to think that all the donations made in Simon's memory are helping to make a difference for people diagnosed with brain tumours in the future, particularly because they devastate too many families." Louise Aubrey, Community Development Manager for Brain Tumour Research, said, "We're really grateful to Simon's family for their support and generosity. We hope that their visit to our Centre of Excellence at Queen Mary University of London offered a useful insight into all we're doing to improve treatment options for patients and, ultimately, find a cure. And to find out more about sponsoring a day of research, go to braintumourresearch.org/fundraise/sponsor-a-day. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs. There's a lovely photograph of Simon and his wife Jane Campbell on the coast somewhere, and then a picture of Simon with his two sons, which I assume is taken at some Formula One racetrack.
And this one is headed, "Museum is well worth your time." And starting at the end, this article was written by Owen Bossetti, a journalism student from Bournemouth University. "I was invited by the Royal Logistic Corps Museum to view their latest attraction alongside the rest of their museum. Taking the 86 bus from Winchester High Street, I made my way up to Worthy-Down, where I discovered the beautiful scenery surrounding the museum. After a short wait in the reception, I was greeted by the commercial manager of the museum, Gemma Ingerson, where she warmly welcomed me to the establishment. The Royal Logistic Corps Museum tells the story of logistic support to the British Army from Agincourt in 1415 to the modern day. It is one of six military museums in Winchester, each with their own story to tell. I was first shown their new exhibit, the amphibious vehicle called DUKW, which was used during D-Day, playing an essential logistic role in the conclusion of the Second World War. The DUKW, pronounced duck, was a sight to see, an enormous vehicle embedded in the history of our country. Furthermore, Miss Ingerson provided me with the knowledge about not only the record of the duck, but also the history of the Royal Logistic Corps. It was intriguing to know that the Royal Marines, who had donated the vehicle from Surrey, had nicknamed the duck Crispy Duck, due to the rust that it had sustained on the vehicle over time. After seeing and hearing, learning about the new attraction, I was presented with the opportunity to learn and view the rest of the history surrounding the Corps. I learned that the Corps operated the duck when they were called the Royal Army Service Corps, who then became the Royal Corps of Transport, then the Royal Logistic Corps we have today. The museum provided interactive understandings about the scents, as in S-C-E-N-T-S, of the food made during the World War II, a bomb defusal where you're required to follow a wire and discover which of three buttons to press in order to deactivate the ongoing ticking. Get it wrong and you'll be surprised with a loud bang. Get it right and silence will be what's heard. The interactive displays were definitely my favourite part, as I felt as I was placing my footsteps into history, allowing a clearer imagination as to what it would feel like being in the present of historic times. In the museum, there was a room full of medals showing prized gold and rewards of those who have dedicated their life to serve our country and put us where we are today. The establishment contained many vehicles, weapons, and different types of armour that have been used over time. Each item was numbered so it would be as simple for myself and future visitors what the item was, alongside a description and a brief history. I didn't know about Winchester's military museums until my week at the Hampshire Chronicle, and I'm honoured to have had the opportunity to visit and learn about such an important part of this country. The museum is open Tuesday to Saturday from 9:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. and even better, it is free entry and car parking. There are a lot of photographs here, and I'm not actually going to attempt to describe them, except to say that the crispy duck is really actually enormous, but what's so weird is it's got six huge wheels. Anyway, obviously worth a visit.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts, and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Bye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.